Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Well, if you don't know Bob and Larry, the hairbrush song, or the story of Rack Shack and Benny, then you probably didn't have kids born in the 1990s or early 2000s, because that's the generation who grew up with VeggieTales, those Bible-based kids' videos starring a cast of talking vegetables. Very interesting story behind it. In its first decade, VeggieTales became the Christian version of the Disney empire, I guess you could say. Profits grew to $44 million, with the veggies outselling every other kids' product in the world. And yet just a few years later, creator Phil Vischer, the man who started the dream on a computer in his spare bedroom, was writing a book about the company's collapse. Phil is the voice behind Bob the Tomato as well, and he joins us now. Phil, or Bob, or whatever your name is, it's good to have you on Open House tonight.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I want to start with a bit of a quote from the book, Me, Myself, and Bob, which is where you've chronicled the journey. Quote, fairly early in life, I noticed my brain was weird. It had a way of looking at normal things from a slightly twisted angle, just twisted enough that it often made me chuckle. Now, give me an example of that. When did you realize you had a strange brain?
Oh, even sitting in church as a kid, you know, I grew up going to church every Sunday, and I'd sit in Sunday school, and they'd be telling Bible stories in a fairly conservative, you know, Christian church in the church basement, and they would just say something, and I would just think, well, that's kind of weird the way they said that, and I would start to chuckle, and no one around me was laughing. Found it, and I, you know, sometimes just think of little jokes, or, well, if you twisted the story that way, that'd be really funny, and they weren't, you know, devious or sinister things. It was just, well, you could look at it this way, and that's kind of amusing. And that was really the start of, you know, I mean, VeggieTales is basically that. It's me going through Bible stories and saying, yeah, but what if the people of Jericho were throwing slushies at the Israelites while they were going around? I mean, what were they doing while the Israelites were marching around in circles, just standing there? No, they'd probably be insulting them like the Frenchman in Monty Python's The Holy Grail and throwing slushies or icies at them. I think that's what they'd be doing. You know, it's just that kind of thing that got me in trouble in Sunday school, but turned out to work in my favor once I was making VeggieTales.
Yes. So the seeds of your career and your vocation were actually obviously sown quite early in you.
Yes. I actually, my Sunday school teacher actually had to sit down with my parents and have a talk about me because I was being a little disruptive. You know, and I got in trouble in first grade about the same time for just being not a mischievous kid, but my first grade teacher called my mom in and said that that day I had refused to take out my reading book from my desk because I had trapped a fly in my desk. And if I opened my desk, the fly would get out, and he was my pet. You know, and so it was that kind of innocent weirdness, you know, not mischievousness. I wasn't setting anyone's hair on fire or trying to hurt anybody. It was just I was having fun with a fly in my desk. And so my mom said, well, you know, he's really enjoying drawing. Could you, like, give him something to draw? So they had me decorate a whole bulletin board in our first grade class to try to channel my creative energies a little better.
Yeah. So where did that those primary school years then move into high school years and then move into your next job? I mean, how did the progression move from you then becoming somebody who then got involved in graphic design, animation, etc.?
Yeah, I started making films, made my first animated film when I was 9 years old. Started playing with puppets when I was six. And I really enjoyed, because I was shy. I was a shy kid, and I really enjoyed the experience of hiding behind the couch in the living room where no one could see me, but then sticking a puppet over the back of the couch and talking to my parents. You know, so I think if I was more extroverted, I probably would have been an actor or a stand-up comedian. But I was too shy, and so I thought, you know, I'm going to put on this fuzzy little puppet, and I'm going to hide, and he's going to come out and entertain people. And then I learned about animation, you know, from watching Disney films and watching Saturday morning cartoons in the U.S. You know, and I wanted to, oh, how do they do that? Because you can bring characters to life. You know, some kind of crazy magic. And so I read books about animation that my dad got me, and then I borrowed my grandfather's Super 8 film camera that he used to shoot home movies. And I started shooting films around the house and trying to figure out how to do you know, simple animation, and that started when I was about 9 years old.
Phil Vischer is our guest on Open House tonight, the co-creator of Veggie Tales, author of Me, Myself, and Bob. It's quite a story, theopenhouse.net.au for the podcast of it. Now, your parents separated when you were quite young. You mentioned this in the book. How did that contribute to your outlook on life?
Yeah, it affected me pretty significantly. I think my dad was my primary creative inspiration. You know, he was the one who bought me Legos and puppets and books about filmmaking. And he was an advertising executive at a big tire company. So when I was 7 or 8, you know, I created my own fictitious tire company so I could lay out my own fictitious ads just like my dad's.
Wow.
And I would actually cut parts out of his ads and then lay them out into my own ads. But then when I was 9 or so, one day he came downstairs with a suitcase in his hand and kissed me on the forehead and walked out the door. You know, and I was already shy, but that really pushed me much further inside. And I'd been sharing a bedroom with my little brother, and I moved down into the basement, into the room that was my dad's old office. And I just kind of, you know, cocooned in there and made films and listened to music and didn't come out much. It made me really, really introverted, you know, and focused on the stuff in my own head, much less on other people.
Do you think that had some sort of role in developing your creative talents? I just remember us talking to Catherine Patterson, the author of Bridge to Terabithia and some other, you know, well-known children's books, and she talks about growing up as a missionary kid in China and how, you know, she was so different to so many people around her, and it did kind of drive her to the library, and it drove her into an interior kind of existence, and yet that's where her imagination started to flourish.
Yeah, I think there is something to that. I remember I would resent the kids that were out there doing all the sports and in all the clubs and, you know, really popular and had all these friends. And I remember, you know, going to we had a summer Bible conference that my great-grandfather started in the middle of Iowa. And so every summer we'd go for 10 days, and I was a shy kid, and I didn't know any of the other kids. And there are all these cool kids from Nebraska and they had money, and they had nice clothes, and they all hung out together. And I remember for like 5 years being jealous of them, you know, like, oh, they have everything. And then one year, through some weird twist of fate, I ended up in high school hanging out with them for about 2 days, and they thought I was hilarious. And conversely, I discovered they were really rather dull. And I don't know if there was something, because, you know, if everything goes well for you, if you've got the money and you've got the friends and you're good at sports, you know, if there's just nothing poking at you enough to make you react by, you know, developing a sharp wit, or, you know, just using your creativity to imagine things being different. I don't know if that's a key, but you do see that in a lot of authors and a lot of filmmakers.
And you were mentioning how you grew up going to church. Was there a moment for you later on in life when you kind of made that faith a personal thing, where you kind of said, okay, well, I'm going to own this for myself? Is there some story there?
Yes. Yeah, there was. You know, after my dad left, you know, and he was the Sunday school superintendent at our church and sometimes preached from the platform, so it was really a big hit to our whole church. When my parents split up, my mom was the choir director at our church. And then my mom remarried, and my stepfather I just didn't connect with at all, you know. And so he would try to have family devotions with us kids, and for me it just seemed like a joke, because I honestly didn't feel like I had a family. You know, I had a mom and a dad that lived in different states, but this notion of family, or, you know, that we're going to have family devotions, just seemed like a joke. And I remember thinking, all right, when I was in high school, either Christianity needs to make sense to me personally, or I need to abandon it, because I'm not going to accept it just because my parents told me to, because obviously, you know, I can't even hold them to their word in what they committed to each other.
Sure.
And it was, you know, it was through my church youth group and then just reading a lot and studying that I finally said, okay, on my own, I'm going to make this my faith, because I believe it is true, not simply because my parents handed it to me.
Yeah. This is Open House Across the Nation. Phil Vischer is our guest tonight, co-creator of Veggie Tales, quite a fascinating story about the company's rise and collapse. We're going to get to that in just a minute. But let's talk about those first films. 1992, you already have this fascination for animation, as you've already kind of mentioned. And you start setting out to make a kids show that parents would enjoy too. Now, what was the mix of components of this program that you were wanting to combine?
Yeah, well, by then I was a computer animator working in Chicago, doing TV commercials and the opens for shows and you know, industrial training videos and things like that. And I was trying to figure out how I could tell my stories. And I'd also decided, because you know, the music video channel MTV turned on for the first time in the States in 1982 when I was a sophomore in high school. And I had a really strong reaction to that. I thought it was really cool, you know, the techniques that were being used and the creativity that was going in the music videos. But at the same time, I was really concerned about the values that were coming across in the videos, because for the most part, they were not the values that I'd learned in Sunday school. You know, and I remember thinking as a sophomore in high school, if everybody my age thinks this new thing is as cool as I do, we have a big problem. And it was at that point that I really thought, okay, I think I could be a filmmaker. I think I could make stuff like that, but I want to see if I can take what I learned in Sunday school, what I learned in church, and what I've learned out of the Bible, and put that into filmmaking. I started by going to Bible college. I thought, I better go to Bible college so I know what I'm talking about. And then after that, I'll go to film school so I know how to say what I'm talking about. In the end, I never made it to film school. And after 3 semesters of Bible college, I was asked not to return.
Oh, no. You were trapping flies in your tidy box, weren't you?
Actually, I had failed chapel. Which was required at that school. And if you failed chapel 2 semesters in a row, you couldn't come back for another semester. So I left Bible college, never went to film school, ended up getting a job in video production, and then starting to do TV commercials and stuff like that, all the while thinking, okay, how can I tell my stories? And I finally got to the point where the software, as computer animation was developing, this was 1989 or so, so we're about 6 years before Toy Story, you know, the first computer animated movie. I finally got to the point where I thought, I think I could tell a simple story with computer animation if the characters don't have any arms, legs, hair, or clothes. Because those things were just nightmares on the computer. And I thought, okay, I need naked, bald, limbless characters, and I want to sell these videos to Christians. The first thing that came to my mind was a candy bar. And so I made a little candy bar and gave him a little face, big goofy eyes, and made him hop around a little bit. I thought, well, this is cute. And then my wife walked by, saw the candy bar on the computer screen. We just got married. I was working at home out of our spare bedroom. And she said, you know, moms are going to be mad if you make their kids fall in love with candy bars. And I thought, oh, she's right. Well, what wouldn't moms be mad about their kids falling in love with? And the next thing that popped into my head was a cucumber.
Yes. There you go. And the rest is almost history.
The rest is history.
It really is an idea. You must have had a lot of fun to produce these half-hour Bible stories narrated by a tomato and a cucumber.
Yeah.
It must have been a lot of fun making them.
It was a lot of fun. And it was especially fun, you know, when it was just a few guys in the garage, you know, before suddenly it became huge. And you know, because we went from there were 3 of us in 1993, making the first couple of VeggieTales videos, to 7 years later, in the year 2000, there were 210 of us. I'd built the largest animation studio in between the coasts in the U.S. We'd sold 30-plus million VeggieTales videos. You know, and I'd just been named one of 10 people to watch in worldwide religion on a public television special in the U.S. You know, so I'd gone from nowhere and nothing, and I couldn't, you know, borrow a dime to make the first video, to suddenly the Wall Street Journal was calling for interviews, People Magazine came to our house for interviews, Time and Newsweek called for interviews. And that just, you know, that was scary, because I was a shy kid, you know, and that was just a tremendous challenge to say, okay, God, you've now put me on top of something that is just exploding. Am I going to mess it up?
You also got that that great, I guess, round of applause from that TV program that everybody wants to have some sort of reference in, and that's The Simpsons.
Yes, VeggieTales was referenced in 3 different episodes of The Simpsons. Once just in passing, because some of their background artists were fans. So Homer Simpson is walking through a comic book convention, and in the background there's a booth with Bob and Larry on top of the booth. And a couple, once more overtly, where they actually parodied on TV a vegetable Bible story episode and animated it. And probably the biggest shocker was when Saturday Night Live in the States did a 2-minute animated, you know, direct parody of VeggieTales, assuming, you know, that their audience was familiar enough with it that they should make fun of it. It was called The Religtables.
Right.
And it was quite hilarious and equally offensive at the same time.
Yes. But it shows just how influential the VeggieTales became, didn't it? When you start getting cultural references like that, we're talking major influence within your country.
Yeah, it was really amazing what happened. I mean, a study was done a few years ago that one-third of all American households where young kids were present had bought at least one VeggieTales video. At another point, CNN, cable news network here in the States, did a study and discovered that VeggieTales was among the top 10 most watched videos on college campuses across the U.S., which
that's surprising.
Just freaky.
Yeah, it is a bit. Phil Vischer is our guest on Open House. Now, Phil, all of this, 210 staff in your now bustling studios that you've created, 30 million sales right around the world, and then 2002, your parent company, Big Idea, that you created, is against the wall and facing a legal battle, which all kind of surrounds this this film that you created called Jonah. What went wrong? Where did things start to unravel?
What went wrong was, at some point, you know, I decided, okay, this is working so well, let's make it a lot bigger. I think God wants me not to just tell these stories, but build the next Disney. And, you know, success has a way of increasing our ambition. And I decided, you know, I was going to do as much as I could, as fast as I could. And we started, I mean, that's when we just started hiring like crazy. And I really thought, okay, I think I'm supposed to be the next Walt Disney. You know, wouldn't that be awesome? That's just what God would want, right? And so I said, and what I didn't stop to say was, you know, I'm a really shy kid. I really kind of enjoy working alone, frankly. Did God wire me to be the next Walt Disney? You know, is this what he's asking me to do, or is this just my ego talking? And we often fail to do that, you know, to really stop and say, okay, I have an opportunity to go in this direction, and it sounds really fun to me. Is this from God? And is this something he wants me to do, or is this just, you know, part of my ego? Is this part of my childhood? You know, so many different things can make things appeal to us. But I just convinced myself I'm supposed to be the next Walt Disney, and that's what will make me happy, and that's what God wants for me. And I took off on a tear, you know, just hiring people and building and bringing in executives. And we just overstaffed. You know, we started too many projects, and then found ourselves, after we had started our first feature film, Jonah, starting to run out of money before the film was even done, and had to change distributors to try to get advances from a new distributor. And the old distributor took us to court and sued us and claimed we didn't have the right to do that, and ended up winning that suit, which was later overturned on appeal. They said, no, you had the right to do that. But a jury in Dallas, Texas, handed them $11 million worth of damages, saying we didn't have the right to change distributors, and that immediately flipped the company upside down into bankruptcy. And literally everything that I had created in 14 years, you know, all the characters, all the songs, all the stories, all got packed up into a box and sold at auction to the highest bidder in November of 2003, and I lost it all.
How do you even describe the emotions that you felt during that time?
It didn't make sense. You know, I felt that the work I was doing was so, you know, good for kids and so vital and so needed that there was no way God could let that happen. So until really the bitter end, I was still waiting for God to ride to the rescue, you know, on the white horse with the horns blowing, to even right down to the courtroom battle, that God would show up at the last minute and hand it all back to me, and, oh, I've learned, you know, and I'll do better this time, and off we would go. What I couldn't imagine, my first thought was, well, God, you know, don't you love me? Don't you see how much good I'm doing? Don't you want this to continue? After it all fell apart, and I literally found myself alone, just working out of an office near my house, you know, by myself, he started to unwrap everything and say, don't you see how miserable you were? You know, you were carrying a rock up a hill that I never asked you to carry. I didn't ask you to save the world. I didn't ask you to become the next Walt Disney. I just asked you to walk with me and follow me on a daily basis. You know, but it was affecting my health. I had pericarditis 1 year, which is a viral infection of your heart that you know, almost killed me. The next year I had strep throat. The year after that I had shingles, you know, which typically affects the very old or the very frail. And I was So I was literally falling apart, but I refused to stop running because I thought that's what God wants from us. He wants us to do as much as we can, as fast as we can, until we fall down dead.
Yeah.
What he had to tell me was, he pointed out to me that what I had done was I made the work I was doing for him more important than my relationship with him.
Mm.
You know, that I didn't stop to take the time to say, okay, God, I'm at a crossroads. What do you want me to do? You know, how did you wire me? Who did you make Phil to be? And because I wouldn't slow down enough to ask that question and let God answer it, I made up my own answer, which was, you made Phil to be Walt Disney.
Yes.
And it was all about what I wanted.
Yeah.
And not about what God had asked me to do, which is where my true happiness comes from.
As I listen to your story and the lessons that you're starting to unwrap and unpack out of it, three things come to mind. One is the call of God on each of our lives, and how you are learning that you had to really seek God to find out what that was, because otherwise, I guess the dreams of the world, I guess, can influence our own dreams in the sense of big, in the sense of great, in the sense of huge, in the sense of, yes, like you said, becoming
exactly
the next Walt Disney. And also notions of success, too. How would you define success these days?
Today, I wrote a couple of children's books not long after the bankruptcy, and took them to an agent, a Christian agent, to see if we could set them up with a publisher. And he said, why don't you come down and we'll do some brainstorming at the whiteboard with my whole team. And so I got there, and they, you know, the guy got up in front of the whiteboard to start to write down my thoughts. And their first question was, "Where do you want to be in 5 years?"
Mm.
You know, which is another way of saying, "How will you measure success? You know, how big do you want to be? How far do you want to go? What's your perfect dream for where you want to be in 5 years?" And all I could think to answer was, "In 5 years, I want to be in the center of God's will."
Mm.
And if that means I'm doing, you know, something tiny, perfect. If it means I'm doing something huge, that's great too. But the point is, our happiness doesn't come from doing great things. Our happiness comes from our walk with God. Okay, great things, the fruit that our lives bear, comes out of our walk,
yes,
not out of our ambition. And I had to let go of my ambition to say, okay, God, this life is not about my ambition. This life is about your will. So you tell me where you want me to be and carry me there. And I trust that that's where I'll find my joy, and that has exactly been the case.
Yes. And what have you learned about God's nature and character through all of this as well, Phil?
What amazed me was that he loved me so much that he was willing to stand back and let all of my good works fall apart in order to save me from myself. You know, I don't think I grew up imagining a God that cared more about me than about what I could do for him.
Yeah.
And that's the God I have come to know. I also have come to know a God that wants me to let go of my dreams. And that's particularly growing up in the States, you know, where it's like, you know, every country has a national bird and a, you know, national song. Well, the U.S. has a national dream, you know, the American
yes
dream.
Yes.
And we're marinating in this all our lives. And in every Disney movie, you know, if you follow your heart, all your dreams will come true.
Yeah.
If you wish upon a star.
Uh-huh.
And what I've learned from the nature of God is that dreams are dangerous friends. Because what we say our dreams are often has much more to do with our childhoods, with what we were missing, with what we think we were missing, what we think will make us happy, and very often very little to do with God's love for us or his call on our lives. So, and I've learned that anything that I am unwilling to let go of, a dream, a family, a child, anything, is an idol. And if I'm holding on to something more tightly than I'm holding on to God, I'm headed for trouble.
Yeah. Well, you do have, you know, I guess we should wrap up, I guess, what's happened with Big Idea, the company. It was sold off, and now VeggieTales does continue. But you're now doing a new venture. Jellyfish Labs is the company. Jelly Telly is one of the projects that you're working on. How do all these lessons that you've just unraveled for us there, you've just outlined for us,
ventures? I'm still a creative consultant with VeggieTales, so I'm still doing voices because I'm the voice of about half the characters. And I give notes on scripts and do creative work for them. And that's kind of how I keep the lights on and pay the bills, which is just an amazing gift of provision from God that I could lose it, but it could still sustain me. Mm. But since then, I've been looking at, okay, what are kids doing now? You know, they're not running around with VHS cassettes under their arms anymore. They've got iPods and Xboxes, and they're on YouTube. They're online. They're watching streaming video on the Internet. How are we going to minister to kids over the next 10 years as effectively as VeggieTales did over the last 10 years? And we've launched something that God has led me into called Jelly Telly. And it's basically a tiny little kids' TV network for Christian families on the Internet. So we're teaching kids the books of the Bible. We're teaching them about science and about history from a Christian worldview with games that they can play. I'm hoping that we can help raise a generation of Christian kids who know what it means to live the gospel in front of the eyes of a watching world. Mm. Now, how is it different than me building Big Idea? It's God has taught me to hold things loosely. And so I'm pursuing these ideas because he's laid them on my heart, but if at any time, you know, he steps in and says, hey, Phil, you're off course, or hey, Phil, I need you to change direction slightly, I'm not going to grab onto this and say, but this is my dream. You know, this is how I want it to happen. My new company is actually called Jellyfish Labs because jellyfish can't locomote. They can't choose their own course.
Yes.
They can, you know, just squish, squish up a little. They can squishy, squishy down a little. But they have to trust that the current will carry them where they need to be to find food, to find sustenance. And I realized as a Christian, I was kind of acting like a big studly barracuda. Like, you know, I can go wherever I want. I can do whatever I want. Look at me, God. You know, stand back and watch me go. And I realized, no, I'm really more of a, you know, spineless, brainless bag of goo.
So eloquently put.
Yeah, thank you. And what I need to do as a Christian is just stay in the current of God's will and trust that his will carry me where he wants me to be.
Phil, what a fascinating discussion this has been, not just creatively or theologically, but personally as well, all of those things combined. Thanks so much for your time. I'll do one last question. Who's your favorite VeggieTales character to actually voice?
Is a couple of them. Archibald Asparagus, I enjoy. He's my, you know, kind of Monty Python homage, my inner John Cleese. And he's also the part of me that when I was 7 years old, my sister chased me with worms, not the other way around. Okay, so that's my kind of little British fop, if you will. The other one that I really enjoy is Mr. Lunt. You know, the, hey, boss, what are we doing with all these bunnies? That guy. Because for some reason, I can say things when I'm in character as Mr. Lunt that I could never get away with saying as Bob the Tomato or anyone else.
Yes.
And so he is just fun. He's a lot of fun to perform.
Would Mr. Lunt like to say goodbye to us then?
Hey, are you down there in Kangaroo Land? Thanks for listening to the show. Don't forget to go to jellytelly.com and order Phil's book online somewhere because he paid me to say that.
Phil Vischer, fascinating to talk to you. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
That's Phil Vischer, the co-creator of the popular VeggieTales series, and as Mr. Lunt just reminded you there, the guy behind the new JellyTelly.com venture, and also author of Me, Myself, and Bob, which tells that pretty amazing story as you just kind of had outlined there of the rise and the fall of Big Idea and VeggieTales and all the amazing lessons that Phil has learnt through the journey.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.